97.5, The Fanatic.
Sunday morning, Philadelphia. I'm Andrew Salchunas here on 97.5, The Fanatic. No Jamie Lynch today for the entire month of May. He'll be back at some point. So it's just the Bake Radio Show at this point. I'll be taking you until 12 o'clock here on The Fanatic. And, you know, there's a lot going on. There's never a dull moment in Philadelphia sports, even when seasons come to an end. Because when seasons come to an end, you immediately start thinking, what's next? And there's a lot of question marks surrounding the Philadelphia 76ers. Way too many to make me feel really all that great. But I was driving home, listening to the press conference, Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey on Friday. I actually got home before the press conference was over, sat in the car, kept on listening. And you don't come away with it feeling great. Because the questions that were asked, and I'm not ripping any reporters here because I would have asked the same questions. But the questions that were asked, you know, the answers were obvious. It was, hey, do you think the bench was good enough? We think we need to add some pieces to the bench. Well, yeah, no duh. No duh, Daryl. No duh, Doc. You got to add some pieces to the bench. How's Matisse Thybulle progressing? Oh, well, he needs to work on a shot. Ah, shocker. Matisse Thybulle, who can't shoot above 30% from three, needs to work on his three-point shot. Wow, incredible. You know. And then, of course, everybody thought, not everybody, but a lot of people thought that Doc Rivers would not be returning. Now, there's still the reports that they're going to be talking over the next couple of days, but Daryl Morey straight up said, yes, he's going to be back here next year, unless Doc Rivers forces his way out. And if he does, then I'm sure a lot of people are going to be celebrating. But in the meantime, he's the head coach of your Philadelphia 76ers next year. Doc's back. James Harden is back. $47.4 million. Whether you like him or not, you agree with me, he would be crazy to turn down that contract. It's a player option. It's his decision. Because here's the thing. He didn't play well enough to go, yeah, you know what, I'm going to opt out and try to get a max deal either here or somewhere else. No, he didn't play good enough for that. That time has come to an end. So James Harden will be here for $47.4 million next season. Tobias Harris played well during the playoffs, but I guess they could try to still move him. There's a lot of question marks. And I'll be honest, I don't feel great right now. And that's what sucks the most. When the Sixers series ended last year against the Atlanta Hawks, I was pissed off as could be. And I was done with Ben Simmons. And then Ben Simmons was clearly done with you. Like 2 days after the season ended, it took two whole days for a report to come out that Ben Simmons wanted to be traded, right? So you start going, okay, well, he wants to get traded as much as he's pissing me off because he has no ground to stand on demanding a trade. At least they could try to get something of worth for him. So the idea of potentially improving made last offseason more enjoyable than what I believe this offseason will be. There's a lot of moves that can happen this offseason. They can move Tobias Harris if they want to. And if they do, is it for another max player? Is it for a bunch of bench pieces? It's going to be a fun offseason to go, oh, the Sixers should go after this guy, they should go after that guy. But it's not like they have all the money in the world either. They're going to have to hit on vet minimum guys. They're going to have to get guys like Patrick Beverley, who you saw talking about James Harden the other day on ESPN. Everybody was saying he needs to be here. I've been wanting Patrick Beverley for like the last eight seasons, if I'm being honest with you. He's a guy that you just absolutely want on your team. But this offseason, as busy as it's going to be, I can't sit here today on May the 15th and say, well, I know they're going to hit it out of the park and they're going to be great after, you know, they're going to be great next year. They're still going to have Joel Embiid. They're still going to have James Harden, who might not be the player that we are accustomed to from his days in Houston, but he's still a valuable player, I would say, if his head's into it, which clearly wasn't in the playoffs. But if you're getting, what, 55%, 60% of James Harden from the days of Houston, is that going to cut it? Probably not. Because in the days of the NBA of big twos and big threes, like you look at Milwaukee, Chris Middleton's been out. They have Giannis, who's an absolute freak. Drew Holiday's still a hell of a player. But then they also have depth. the Sixers' big two is Joel Embiid and who? Tyrese Maxey, I guess. It's got to be. So I look at this team and I go, all right, they still have Embiid, they still have Maxey. It's not like football where you need 15 to 20 good bone players, right? You really only need two, and then you can start building around it, like good bones of a team, good bone structure. But I just don't feel that great heading into this offseason. The offseason started. I mean, today should be game seven. If the Sixers had a pulse in games five or six, today would be game seven. Because I thought they'd lose one of the two. Today would be game seven. It's not happening. Boston survived. They have game seven. Like, that's what sucks, right? You see other teams in the NBA having a pulse in playoff games. Sixers didn't have that. And so then you start thinking about culture. And, you know, I've heard from so many people over the years that the culture within the Sixers organization is built on losing. I don't buy that. Like, I don't think Joel Embiid is comfortable with losing because he came through a culture of losing through the process. I don't believe that to be true. I really don't. And there are so many new faces. Coaching, front office, management, players. Like, there are so many new faces. And don't give out, it's in the water down there. Like, no, like, you know, forget that. But I look at this team and I go, all right, clearly there's no leadership, as we've been talking about. I feel bad. I had a caller last week after game five saying there's no leadership on this team. And I was like, dude, you weren't saying that the last two nights when they won those two games, games three and four, were you? And he said, no, I wasn't saying that. But he's probably right. Now that I sit back, I go, he's probably right. Tobias Harris, I believe, is a leader. But I don't know how much of a leader he is in game. From quarter one to quarter four. We've heard it multiple times, multiple reports. He himself has told us that during the season, he organizes the team dinners. He organizes, you know, where everybody's going after a game. He does all that. So I think he's a leader in terms of the day-to-day kind of stuff, right? But when it's game day, he doesn't seem to have that sort of gravitas where he's getting the guys going. James Harden showed that with Tyrese Maxey, a young player that... And we've heard, again, from multiple reports, not reporters, players themselves. Go back there. I remember that when James Harden first got traded here, there was a video that circulated about how great he would be for Tyrese Maxey because of a lot of the rookies on the Brooklyn Nets spoke and talked about how great James Harden has been to the younger players. He's always pushing them to get better. That's great. But then it seems like he doesn't push Joel Embiid. Unless there's just like a mutual respect of, hey, he knows what he's doing. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to help these younger players out. But when Joel Embiid is moping around in game five, you need to pick him up. So I don't know what this culture is of this team. I don't know who James Harden is health-wise, player-wise, talent-wise. He's not the same player in Houston. And I don't think there's just one fix for this team. I really don't. And Daryl Morey knows that he's got his work cut out for him. And my biggest concern is, like, who's back, who's not. I freaked out the day Furkan Korkmaz got re-signed. Oh, no, he could shoot a little bit, Andrew. No, he can't. He can barely shoot. He has no defensive game. And all of a sudden, he thinks he can pump and drive. He can't shoot above 30% from three. That defenses don't even respect the pump fake anymore from him. But they brought him back last year. Why? Because they probably felt comfortable. I need to see different kind of moves. And I don't know if that means trying to move on from a Matisse Thybulle. No, they probably have him for cheap, so they're going to try to see what they can get out of him next year. But my concern is Matisse Thybulle Furkan Korkmaz? And by that I mean you expect him to play 20, 25 minutes. And it started going downhill. And then you bring him back. So Matisse Thybulle, who is a one-way player, as they talked about in the press conference, Doc Rivers himself said he is a one-way player. That's great. I'm glad that the whole league knows that. Oh, but he got better at cutting this year. Awesome. Wow. He's got to be able to hit a jump shot. He has to. Until then, he's a net negative. Quite frankly, sometimes I think his defense is overrated. Because he gets blown past every single time. And yeah, every once in a while, he has the incredible block from behind. Saw it against Tyler Herro in game six. But sometimes, He can't make the block. And then it's an easy basket because he got burnt. But he's one of the younger guys that's supposed to help uplift you to the next level. These later first round picks, these second round draft picks that the Sixers have had since drafting Joel Embiid, or since Joel Embiid is grown into the player that he is, Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris, they need to be able to hit on some of these players. And these guys, it seemed like they're so close, and then they don't get developed. And is that a Doc Rivers problem? Maybe. I mean, look at Paul Reed as a perfect example. I go into this offseason not feeling as good as I did going to the offseason last year. Because I don't know how much changes. It's easy to say that we need to do this, we need to do that. We need to bolster the bench. Yeah, you do. But until I start seeing the reports that there's a big change coming, what's different? Seriously, what's different? It'll end up just being the exact same team. A team that got you to the fourth seed and a team that ultimately disappointed in the playoffs. So I want to hear from you today at 610-632-0975 because, today should have been game 7 if they had a pulse in games 5 or 6. Today should have been game 7 down in Miami. And, we'd be doing play the song and getting fired up and getting ready. But that's just not the case today. Instead, we're talking offseason. Instead, we're talking what do they need to do to get back to where they were last year as a one seed, as a legit true contender until Ben Simmons crapped the bed. That's what we need to talk about this offseason, and it's going to be a wild one. But the things that are not changing are the ones that a lot of people want to change. Doc Rivers is staying. James Harden is staying. Those are the two biggest things that people want fixed. That ain't happening. Doc Rivers, Daryl Morey said his thing. James Harden would be crazy to turn down a $47.4 million player option. So, the next question is, I guess the next tier of what people want to change is, well, trade Tobias. Okay. What is Tobias getting you? It might be a move where you bolster the bench, but then you lose that max slot. I don't know. Do you get another starter and you move Tyrese Maxey to the bench, as my man Ant's been saying for a while now? You look at this team and I just go, okay, they're not where I thought they were when Harden first got traded here. When they rattled off 5 wins, 5 of 6, 5-0 with Harden. Harden missed the one game they lost in the first 6. And I watched that team move the ball with ease. And that team wasn't the same that we saw in the playoffs. You're going to have to figure out what he's doing with Danny Green. I mean, Danny Green, torn ACL. Yeah, he's 35, right? People thought he was cooked when he was healthy, let alone with a major injury like that. I feel for him. I do. And I thought him going down is a big reason why he lost game 6, but I'm sorry. It also can't be the reason why he lost game 6. That's just wrong. 610-632-0975, along with the Sixers. And there's a lot going on, which is why I'm happy to be in here today, even though I'm in a terrible mood because I woke up this morning. You know how we do morning thoughts during the midday show with Ant. I woke up this morning saying, oh my God, today would have been game 7. And instead of me being hyped for game 7, obviously, because they lost, I can't even feel confident about this offseason based off of what I heard, because they weren't going to really give you much. I mean, Daryl even said it. There was one quote where he goes, I don't want to go into too much detail because we still have guys here, right? Like there's guys still in the building. They were cleaning out their locker room. He didn't want to go into too much depth as to who needs to be moved or where they need to improve. Like he doesn't want to do that. And Bede kind of opened up after the game, last week on Thursday, and said that they need to be more athletic and they need to get more players. Here's the biggest issue, along with the culture message that I kind of threw out there. Way too many players talked about them not being mentally tough enough. And I don't know how that's just a fix, except for maturity. Well, James Harden's in his 30s, and he looked like he was checked out during a game. Is that going to all of a sudden change? I don't think so. On a brighter note, two teams that I'm kind of excited about. The first, I'll start with the Eagles. The Eagles' schedule came out. I'm not going to be doing W's and L's. I'm just not going to do that. But I looked at the schedule, and I felt okay about it, right? Like, I looked at that schedule, and I go, all right, there's some good things here. There doesn't seem like a murderer's row of games. There's, I mean, last year, remember, there was like a stretch, and of course, there's all kinds of COVID issues, but there were stretches where they just played some tough teams, especially early on. I mean, there was a lot of people that made the case, and hey, shame on me for not agreeing that the final 8 weeks, you know, once you get through the first 8 weeks, as long as you're right around 500, you'll be fine. Now, I think the COVID issues really helped them with Garrett Gilbert playing for the Washington Commanders football team at the time. I think they benefited from that last year. But, you know, a lot of people said, look, the second half of the schedule lightens up. They're going to make a push. And they did. It doesn't seem like there's a light part of the schedule, but doesn't also seem like there's this really difficult part of the schedule. So I like what I see. The travel isn't all that bad. You can check it out on 97.5thefanatic.com. Our great Dylan McKinnon wrote a story on the Eagles schedule and gave some nuggets, one of which included the time zones. They're not out west once. The furthest out west they go is Arizona. So they don't have to do the 3-hour time difference out in L.A. That's awesome. And I look at it, you know, the bye week sets up nice, week 7. Dylan also pointed out there's only one team coming off of a bye to the Eagles face, whereas last year, I believe it was 3 or 4 teams came off of a bye before facing the Eagles. And that's just not right, right? The NFL can't do that. But this year, it's only one. It's the Chicago Bears, and that's late in the season. That's week 15. So I like what I saw out of the Eagles' schedule. And as I've been saying, I've been opening up to you over the last couple of weeks, I feel so great about where this team is heading. I feel great about what the draft. I felt great about the free agent period. I felt great about some of the trades they've made, especially A.J. Brown. I felt great about some of the guys they did not acquire. They did not overpay for Christian Kirk. That's awesome. I appreciate that. Did I want Tyrann Mathieu and Kyle Hamilton, either or? Yeah, and did I get any of them? No, I didn't. But Jordan Davis, I think, is going to be a big piece of the future for this team on that defensive line. And Tyrann Mathieu tells me, you know, them not signing him, they didn't want to spend the money. Okay, because I don't think they're ready to win this year. I think they are a year or two away. So that's okay. Somebody else will be there. There's going to be another safety a year or two from now. They had a lot of holes to fill for them to have been legit contenders this year. A ton of holes to fill. And one of them might still be the quarterback position, which is why I'm opening up to you that I'm excited, but that guy still holds me back because I don't know who I should expect this year. Somebody told Anthony that he looks good this year, that he looks good in his workouts with Tom House. All I know is I saw last year him not being able to win games where he had to throw the football. Perfect example was the final game of the year against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the playoffs. They're down 31-0 in a heartbeat, and he couldn't keep up. So maybe he improves. And look, he's now got an incredible amount of weapons around him now that you add A.J. Brown. So that's exciting to me. And the schedule kind of plays out well for the Eagles. Like, I think above 500 without doing the W's and L's, right? I think they're above 500. And then the question is, what kept them from going to that next level? And then that's when the following offseason happens. But I'm all about a rebuild right now. I'm in that mindset where I'm okay with the slower rebuild. But it looks like they did jumpstart a little bit, obviously get a little bit ahead of where I thought they'd be right now with that trade for A.J. Brown. Finally, I tweeted it out before the show, and I have had confirmation. There was a rumbling last night, Dylan. I heard what I thought was a train off in the distance. Because the Fightin' Phils are now winners of 4 straight games, 2 straight series, and the last 3 wins have been against the LA Dodgers in LA. The Chunas train is back up and running. It's like last year all over again. The Sixers broke my heart, and I needed something to feel better about, and the Phillies are always there for me. They'll eventually piss me off, right? They'll eventually break my heart. But they can't break my heart in May and June and July. It'll just be August and September where they break my heart. But for now, for the next 3 months, until Eagles season is back, I got the Chunas train rolling, and I hope everybody wants to jump on board. Give me a little Bryce Harper, Dylan. Let me hear the home run from last night.
Second and third. Harper doubled. His first time up, and he smokes one deep to right field. That is way out of here. The back of the Phillies bullpen, a three-run home run. And the Phillies now lead it 6-1.
I mean, Bryce Harper is playing with an injury in his elbow. His right elbow. And I know I'm a freak who bats left, throws right. Not many of us out there, I guess. I know that's got to be painful because he's pulling with that right elbow, right? And he's on a tear right now. Three straight games with a home run. I'm going to go through some of his game logs because this month of May, my man has been on fire. Fire. So if you want to talk some Phillies excitement, because we should. It's nice. You know, we haven't had anything else to be excited about in the last couple of days. So another good win for the Phillies last night. You can climb in at 610-632-0975. This weekend's programming is brought to you by the Berlin Farmers Market. Don't miss special theme days throughout May at the Berlin Farmers Market, where you can shop more than 75 local businesses and restaurants all under one roof. For hours, info, directions, and more, visit BerlinFarmersMarket.com. The number is 610-632-0975. I'm Andrew Salchunas, and I'm taking you until noon right here on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Yeah, you can't stop the train. I already went on our YouTube chat. By the way, good morning. Andrew Salchunas here on 97.5 The Fanatic. You can watch the show on YouTube. Just search 97.5 The Fanatic. And you figure it out from there. Apparently, the Chunas train is a jinx to the team. I don't buy it. You can't stop this train. John wants, he's saying, John Cheeseboro, no Chunas train yet. Come on, man. You get excited. They just have won three straight against the Dodgers and could sweep a four-game series against L.A. The L.A. Dodgers, one of the best teams in baseball. So forgive me for getting a little excited today, especially following the Sixers' disaster of a series. Bryce Harper on fire right now. Month of May. He's batting 305, an on-base of 361, a slugging of 634, an OPS just under 1,000. He's got six home runs in the month of May out of his nine this season. I mean, and the dude's playing with a legitimate injury in his elbow. Like, that's the thing. He's having his best month. And it's as the injury just continues. And what I don't understand is, I'm not a doctor. Shocker. But oh, believe it or not, I don't really know much about the human body, okay? He can't throw because of the pain, right, and the slight tear. But he can still bat. And he acts. You look at the way he swings. He swings hard. Obviously, I don't want him to miss 6 weeks. Right? I'd rather him DH if he could play through, which he is right now. I just don't understand. They keep on saying, oh, he'll be good 4 to 6 weeks. How? How can he be good 4 to 6 weeks? Yes, he's not throwing, so obviously it's going to rest up a little bit, but he's still swinging. And because he bats left-handed and throws right, he's pulling with that bottom hand. I just don't understand. Again, I'm not a doctor. Dylan McKinnon puts on the board Bryce's OPS in the last 7 days, 1.652, which is just ridiculous. I mean, the guy's showing his MVP form again. Do I think he's going to be a three-time MVP by the end of the season? No, probably not. Manny Machado's a freak right now with the Padres, who they're about to take on. It's still too early to tell who's going to win MVP, for crying out loud. But the guy's on fire, and as he goes, obviously the team goes. And they just won a series in Seattle, taking 2 of 3, and they've already won the series against the Dodgers and looking to sweep them in 4 games. So, yeah, forgive me. Forgive me for getting a little excited today. There's no jinxes. Come on. So we're talking a little bit of the Phillies today because I'm obviously just happy that there's something to be happy about, right? The Eagles I'm actually very excited for, but I have to wait till September. I'm not a big training camp guy. It's training camp day. Let's go. Like, okay. I get excited for the first day because that means it's back. But then I get all the reports of so-and-so's looking great in 7-on-7s. Okay. Remember, I had to talk to people last year. I still remember I had to talk to people last year. Aren't you excited that Jalen Reagor's having a good camp? Please. Am I excited that Jalen Reagor's having a good camp? Come on. And then we saw what happened in the regular season. Let's face it. Training camp doesn't really matter anymore. It doesn't. It gets guys right. They learn the playbook. Obviously, it matters. But, like, there's nothing to get excited about for training camp. That's just not me. OTAs, you know, all this kind of stuff. It's awesome just to see them back out there. But until they're playing actual preseason games, and that really doesn't matter anymore, clearly. They barely played it all last year. What, Jalen Hurts played in one series in the preseason last year. They don't care. So I'm fired up for the Eagles, but that doesn't really mean anything until September for me. So that's why I'm a little excited about the Phillies. They're looking good. Now, something I need to also read from our YouTube chat. This is from Traveling East. And it like burns the core when I read it, but you're spot on, Traveling East. It's sad that the Sixers are always in this position of, quote, how can we fix our train wreck of a team? And as much as I can say they're not far off, because they're not, right? Like, they have arguably the best player in the NBA, the guy who I believe should have won MVP in Joel Embiid. James Harden, yeah, he's not dropping 40 anymore, but he is still a great facilitator. But he also has to have, you know, a bit of an offensive game so that, you know, they respect it, i.e. Ben Simmons, right? Ben Simmons wasn't respected. James Harden has to be respected still. But then after that, it's a lot of question marks, right? Except for Tyrese Maxey, because I'm sure that kid's going to be a star, right? He already showed it. But every year it's something. Every year it's, you know, post-process, like the heyday of the process, it's how can we make this team better? And they do the Jimmy Butler trade in season, Tobias Harris trade in season, and then it obviously falls apart. Jimmy Butler goes to Miami, and then you bring in Al Horford. And at the time, I thought that was a tremendous move. I thought Horford was going to be able to be that stretch four. He's going to be the backup center when Embiid is out, because this is before Embiid put together the great long season that he had this year. So I go, all right, Al Horford slides from the 4 to the 5 when Embiid's out, or in game when Embiid's breathing, Horford slides from the 4 to the 5, but I thought they would still be able to play well together. And I still don't get it. I'll be completely honest with you. I still don't necessarily understand how it didn't work out, because I'm watching Al Horford hitting threes and dribble drive against the Bucks. I'm watching him do it. So I still don't really understand how it didn't work out. Like, it was a disaster. So then they had to clean that up. And I give Daryl Morey all the credit in the world for unloading that ridiculous contract that Al Horford received. And you also got Danny Green. And I know people aren't the biggest Danny Green's fans out there. I loved that acquisition because, A, yes, the contract. B, you brought in a winner. A guy who has won 3 NBA titles, 3 different teams. So I say, wow, that's good. You need that sort of veteran leadership, that sort of experience. Winning culture needs to come in here. And I thought if he doesn't get hurt against the Hawks series, they win that series. I get Ben Simmons passing up the dunk I get Embiid turning the ball over 9 times in Game 7. If Danny Green's not hurt last year, they beat the Hawks. I stand by that. I'll never move off that opinion. So you get rid of the Al Horford contract, and you bring in Danny Green. And then it's, we're all waiting. What do they do during the trade deadline? What do they do? What do they do? And they get George Hill. Another move that I thought would be serviceable. I didn't think he was going to, like, you know, lead them to a championship, but I thought, you know, he comes in 10 to 15 minutes, runs point, sets guys up, and it didn't work out. And so then we go into this past offseason. And then it's Ben Simmons, the whole trade saga that we dealt with. Okay, how are we going to move on from Ben Simmons? Do we go get a star? Or do we go get a bunch of role players? Does he have any worth? And then it just magically appears that James Harden wants out. You get James Harden. And we're all sky high, right? For the most part, all of us are sky high. And then they win 5 games. 5 out of 6. And we're even higher, right? We're talking finals. I didn't. I said I need to see them get out of round 2 first because I haven't seen it since 2001. And shocker, they didn't do it again. But still, I was also excited. Like, I wasn't dousing cold water on anybody that said NBA Finals because I could see how they could have gotten there. I still believe they're the better team than the Heat. They match up well, at least. But when you lose Joel Embiid for the first 2 games, that sucks. So now we're at the same thing all over again for the 5th straight year. What's the big move? And it's never little moves, right? It's never, hey, they just need to get this one piece. They just need to get this one bench guy. No, because now it's, all right, can James Harden play with Tobias Harris? Did Tobias Harris improve his game enough to be able to stay here in Philadelphia? If not, you have to move on from him. If you move on from him, you're probably not going to have Danny Green back next year. So now you need to replace 2 starters. And no, it can't be Matisse Thybulle, who has no offensive game whatsoever. So now we're going into another season where you need to find a starter. And this time you need to find 2. And it just seems like it's nonstop that they need to get another big piece. It's never just that little move. It's not, hey man, if they just trade for this one guy, he'll be the 8th guy in the rotation, 3rd guy off the bench. That's all they need. That's all they need. They just need to, it's not like a baseball team, right? Man, if you just bring in a legit 3rd starter in the rotation, you got something going for you. No. Every single year, they need a cleanup hitter. Or they need a 2nd man in the rotation. Or an ace. Every single year, it feels that way with the Sixers. Even though they do seem close every single year. Think about this. Every single year, they're close. Right? Like, you saw how they could have won that series against the Heat. If Embiid's not out for the first 2 games, and if they have a freaking pulse in games 5 and 6, better attitude, better effort, better energy, whatever you want to say, you see where they could have won that series, okay? You see how they could have won that series against the Hawks last year. They don't blow a 28 and an 18-point lead in 2 different games. The previous year, Ben Simmons is hurt in the bubble. I write that one off. The Toronto Raptors, you had a series lead. And they came back and won, and obviously the doinks, and they go on to win the title. The Sixers could have won the title that year. So you see how in 3 of the last 4 years, and again, forget the bubble year, but in 3 of the last 4 years, they are close. But as close as they may seem every single year, it's not one little fix that they need to make every single year. And that's what freaking sucks the most. Is that I'm now going into another offseason that I'm not just one little piece away. 610-632-0975. But at least the Phillies made me happy yesterday and have been the last couple of games. Let's go to John in Norristown. John, you're on the Fanatic.
Yo, what's up, brother? How you doing today?
Yo, what's up, man?
Man, I just wanted to ask you. I watched, you know, the other, I guess you think, sports shows. I really don't watch anything when the Sixers lose or a Philadelphia sports team lose, because I hate to hear it in national media. But what do you think, if, as far as the Phillies winning 4 in a row, did we win 4 in a row, or was the other teams just bad? Was it more us winning or them losing?
No, I think the Phillies winning. I mean, Look at the run totals they've put up against the Dodgers and against some of their top pitchers. I mean, Urias is a very good pitcher who they took to town yesterday. Walker Buehler, I know it was a last-minute switch in the rotation because Scherzer was out. Walker Buehler's a hell of a pitcher that they beat up. And, oh, by the way, we talk about how bad the Phillies' bullpen is historically. The Dodgers' bullpen is far from the opposite. They're very good, and the Phillies have been able to win. Do I think the Phillies are a World Series team because of these last four games? No, but I don't think that, you know, the teams handed them the games.
Okay, because you, as a Philadelphia sports fan, we see a couple wins, we get excited. I wanted to know what you thought. And I have a question. As far as the Sixers, when we say that we need another player, why can't we develop players? Hey, how come our players that we draft stay drafted players in Miami's culture? Look who they started last game.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, to your point about Miami, they made the point in the broadcast, I believe they said it in Game 5, that they have 8 undrafted players on that roster. 8. And right. And 8 undrafted players, for the most part, that are contributing. Obviously, Duncan Robinson's not really doing that anymore, but he contributed enough in the early stage of his career to get a $90 million contract. But Max Strus, he's an undrafted player, and he was a starter that really killed you in those last two games.
Right. And then you look at the Sixers, and like I know the G League may not be the greatest growth of talent, but we've had the last 2 or 3 years the player of the year in the G League, Paul Reed.
Yeah, but you see, Paul.
These players don't end up; they don't play for us. Why don't we? If Paul Reed should be our backup center next year, we should be bringing in a big man.
Okay, yeah, and John, that might be the case. I mean, this year it was Andre Drummond, I keep on making this point, and I appreciate the call. People just, I think, when it comes to the trade, there's always two ways of looking at it, and it's the ways that I don't agree with any of them. But the ways that the things that I hear the most from callers, from YouTube, from Twitter, from email, from friends that I talk to, it's, oh my God, they traded two of the best players in NBA history in Andre Drummond and Seth Curry, right? Say that tongue-in-cheek, but the reason why the Sixers lost in the playoffs for a lot of people is because they didn't have Andre Drummond and Seth Curry. Let me remind you that with Andre Drummond and Seth Curry, they weren't going to win anything. Okay? They weren't. So you trade them to get James Harden, and you know what? You didn't win anything. So doesn't really work out for you, but Andre Drummond's a free agent at the end of the year. He wasn't going to come back here for some low-level deal. He did that this past season as a prove-it deal. He's probably going to get paid handsomely by some team. Seth Curry, you had to put in the trade. Just had to. You know, it was either him or Matisse Thybulle. I tried telling you, you don't just get better sometimes. But they had to trade Seth Curry. And so Seth Curry goes. But they weren't going to win anything in the playoffs this year had they kept those two guys. So that's one notion I don't ever agree with. The other one, we just forget that the trade deadline happens, what, 60 games into the season? So for everybody that says, Paul Reed should have played more this year, I ask you, when? When should he have played more this year? Because that same backup center that there were tears for, I think people almost held a vigil outside of the Wells Fargo Center when he got traded. But that same backup center that got traded 60 games into the season, he was the backup to Joel Embiid. So where did you want to play Paul Reed? He's not a stretch four. Okay, I know they tried that, and look, it didn't work out in the final game of the playoffs when Embiid and Reed were out there at the same time. It just didn't work out. So, yes, to John's point, should Paul Reed be the backup center next year? If they think he can actually take his game to the next level, and I mean next level in terms of knowing how to play, he's very raw. Very raw. Gets the ball on the block, has an open shot, always puts it on the ground first. You learn that from day one, you don't do that. Dumb fouls constantly, right? A lot of dumb fouls. Has a bit of a jump shot. It's one of the ugliest shots I've ever seen, but has a bit of a shot. Never anticipates a pass. ever. Now, that could be lack of playing time. But I saw it in the Raptors series. I saw it in games 1 and 2 against the Heat when Joel Embiid was out. And I saw it in game 6 against the Heat. James Harden drives the lane. Paul Reed's in the dunker spot. Harden gives him a bounce pass. Paul Reed can't handle it. He either isn't looking for it, isn't ready for it, or he is ready for it, but then can't handle it, bobbles it, and then he's collapsed on again, and he can't finish, even though Harden makes the right pass and a good pass. Maybe with extra playing time, as a lot of people bring up, he can get better. Or maybe he doesn't. And so if you're a general manager, if you're Daryl Morey, to John's point and to everybody who calls in and talks about Paul Reed, because I feel like I'm on an island as the not biggest Paul Reed fan island. If you're Daryl Morey and you're looking at this team and you're looking at, okay, how can I make this team better? He has to know about Paul Reed, right? He can't be like, well, maybe he'll be better next year. So we'll keep him, and he'll be the backup center. No, if he thinks that there is a legitimate way to improve that position, he's going to do it. You know, the other young players, Isaiah Joe. I thought Isaiah Joe was a guy that would be able to take over Furkan Korkmaz's minutes when Korkmaz was still playing. He had opportunities. Isaiah Joe got opportunities earlier in the season. Didn't really play all that well. Charles Bassey. Probably one of those players that he talks about, you know, being really good in the G League. Yeah, really good in the G League. And when he comes up in the NBA, he looks overmatched. Can he get better? Yeah, sure. But are you going to rely on hoping that guys get better, or are you just going to do it yourself? Are you just going to go and grab this guy, like Andre Drummond, like Dwight Howard the previous year? 610-632-0975. Lou on the cell. Lou, you're on the Fanatic.
Yeah, how you doing, man?
What's up, Lou?
Yeah, man, listen, I think, you know, the Sixers I think, you know, whether Embiid was healthy or not, I don't think that they were going to beat the Miami Heat. I mean, I don't know what it's kind of an insult to like a coach on the level of a Spoelstra to think that, you know, a team that picked up James Harden like 3/4 of the way through the season was going to just come in and just beat a team that had continuity, had played throughout the whole year with the same bunch. You know?
I don't really give a damn about if I'm offending Eric Spoelstra or not. He and I will probably never speak a day in our lives. But I will say this, Lou, Embiid steps in games 3 and 4, and they look like a totally different team than in games 1 and 2. Imagine if Embiid does not have a fractured orbital bone, doesn't have a torn ligament in his thumb, isn't coming off of a concussion. I thought from before the playoff series started with the Raptors that if they were to get past the Raptors, I thought they matched up well with the Miami Heat. I still believe that if he was healthy, they would have matched up well with the Miami Heat. Does that mean they would have won the series? I don't know, but I don't think it would have looked as bad as it did.
100%. And you know what? And just as you said, it wouldn't have looked as bad as it did. That's what I think. I don't have a problem with the trade at all.
No.
I don't. I think that we need to see what happens this next upcoming year. You know, if we had Curry and Drummond, it probably wouldn't have looked as bad, only because, again, because of the continuity. But we would have lost the series anyway. Who knows? You probably might have not even made it back there past the Raptors because the level of athleticism would have been even less. But real quick, with Embiid, I love Embiid, but I think that he needs to be paired with a different type of power forward than Tobias Harris. We need like a Bobby Portis type.
Or, Embiid, I don't know. I
prefer, just real quick, here's the thing.
Yeah, go for it.
Here's the thing. Embiid can be dominant in the post, but he's outstanding from the mid-range, right?
Yes.
So at that point, you need somebody who's going to be in another big man who's going to be willing to bang and do all that stuff, which isn't Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris is talented, he's skilled, but he's more of a...
Yeah, that's a good point, man. I appreciate the call. I think my first thought is always a stretch four in terms of spacing, but you might be right. I think they might just need more toughness in general. And, you know, all those guys mentioned mentally tough, right? A lot of the players, Danny Green talked about it, George Niang talked about it, people outside of the Sixers organization talked about it. There was, you know, it was all over the place. I think they just need a tough guy in general, which is why for like the... So, I've always wanted Patrick Beverley on this team. Always. I remember, and I love it, the guy actually tweeted at me apologizing, which you don't have to apologize. If we ever get into a sports argument, you never have to apologize, because I'm wrong a lot of times too. But a guy reached out to me the other day saying, hey man, I got to apologize. I was arguing with you last year over PJ Tucker because you wanted him and I didn't. Okay. You don't have to apologize, like so be it. But yes, I wanted PJ Tucker. I thought PJ Tucker is a guy with stones. Yes, he can hit a corner three for you, which might be perfect for this team now that you're going to be losing Danny Green. Like, think about that. PJ Tucker on this team is perfect. He sits in the corner. He'll get open looks. He'll also bring a level of toughness that you don't have on this team. So I wanted PJ Tucker. I've always wanted Patrick Beverley. I always love him as a player. But you need somebody. Somebody. I'm not saying the Sixers don't have heart or anything. I don't believe that kind of stuff. But you do need somebody here that's going to bring just a tough attitude. I've been wanting a Morris twin for the last decade, right? You don't want to mess with them unless you're Nikola Jokic pushing somebody down from behind. Because he can't face a man-to-man, face-to-face. They just need a level of toughness. I'm looking at the YouTube chat. David Poyron, Marcus Smart. He's not going anywhere, but yes, that is a perfect example. 610-632-0975. I'm Andrew Salchunas. I'm taking you until 12 o'clock. We got Phillies, Sixers, Eagles all on the table today because it's a busy day. Sixers, it would have been game seven today. Instead, we're talking about an offseason, and instead, it's another offseason where they're very close, but it's always a big piece they need to get. Phillies, three straight against the Dodgers, four straight overall. I am on the Tunis train. I saw, you know, it's not a jinx. It's not a jinx, YouTube, all right? And we also got the Eagles schedule. I'm not going W's and L's, but I will tell you that looking at it, I actually feel...
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.